revelation sure is possible. It's possible, but it's damned hard, especially when you have the most powerful corporations in the world battling and raging against you. Yes, of course it's possible for trade justice to survive and to thrive if we stop becoming passive spectators and become actors. Better still, if we start rewriting the play, and then we can become the hope we're looking for. But on the other hand, it makes you feel a bit edgy, especially when you realize for the first time in our cultural history of humanity that economic values have superseded every other human value of compassion and kindness and joy. And the language of economics is like a gang of thieves breaking and entering our brain and stealing our sense of compassion. However, saying all that at the start, I do not want to be labeled a consumer. I am not homo economicus. I am not a hungry consumer, I am not a vigilante consumer, neither am I a compassionate consumer, and neither should you be. We are merely human beings, and we were not put on this planet for the sole purpose of keeping the economy vibrant. I will not tolerate that, and I will not be held hostage in a world where nothing is considered sacred, least of all, the sense of justice. We are thoughtful and creative individuals just having to coexist at this moment in our history with a mega corporate culture. Change will never, ever, ever come about by our governments. They are economic governments. They measure their greatness by economic values. They do not measure their greatness by how they look after the weak and the frail. They will not come about by businesses that are now center stage, richer, more creative, can turn on a dime than any other social institution, and still continue to show no more developed emotions than fear and greed. Change will only come about by a group, a ragtag line like you here of moral dissenters, and to the persistent of small committed groups of people willing to fail over long periods of time until that wonderful rare moment when the dam of oppression and indifference and greed finally cracks and those in power and those in the media finally accept what the world's people are saying all along, that there now has to be a revolution in kindness. It will be a lifetime's work to clear away those fatuous fantasies, those false promises that have been painted in our mind, layer after layer, year after year, on those millions of billboards in print, those millions of electronic ads in a language of myth and persuasion. And if we are still to accept what we are told is apparently inevitable, that is, by the media and our political and economic leaders that say, this is the market, this is our future, then we will become the audience of our own demise. It is time that trade lacking justice, lacking equity, lacking decency and compassion is no longer acceptable. The bottom line has bottomed out. I take all this stuff personally. I take the way businesses are shaving away our sovereign rights personally. I take the way our government's total inability to create a corporate code of governance. I take that personally. I take personally the way I've held mutated babies, genetically handicapped by toxic waste dumped in streams. When in the Sierra Madres in Mexico, babies are born with no genitalia because of the pesticides. I take that damn personally. I take it personally the way businesses run roughshod over indigenous people with not one word in the World Trade Organization that talks about indigenous rights. And what confounds me whenever I talk at groups like the International Chamber of Commerce, their total and utter indifferences to these issues. Because if business has no moral sympathy or honorable code of behavior, God help us all. And our business thinking today totally undermines any sense or any hope of an honourable code. What we have today is really unique. It's a trade system that should, defined by the Quakers, should have been about the freedom of communities to trade equally with each other. And it's now about the license for the big, the powerful, and the rich to ride roughshod over people who have no choice at all whether or not they want to trade with us. And when businesses can sort of roam from country to country with few restrictions in search of the lowest wages, the loosest environmental regulations, the most passive and docile workers and desperate workers, the results can and are terrifying. I've seen this happen in Bangladesh, in Mexico, and most recently in Nicaragua. Early this year in Managua, capital of Nicaragua, I watched 20,000 young women, workers at dawn, streaming into the so-called free zone in the capital city, mainly women, mainly under 16, in the factories where owners, aren't they lucky, pay no taxes, no export duties, and by the way, no living wages. These young girls work 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, making clothes for companies like the most heinous organization, retailing organization on this planet. And I have refused to break bread with anybody that wants to trade in Walmart. Be careful, Walmart is coming to this country under the guise of ASDA. They, even the US military, are being made in these free zones, sewing a pair of jeans costing 20 cents a pair, including wages, where they retail in Walmart for $20 to $30. So I visited them in their cramped rooms, crawling back sometimes, being forced to work 24-hour shifts to their breeze blocks and one single electricity light. And then I witnessed in Managua, Smoky Mountain, acres and acres of a toxic dump, a huge rubbish dump where thousands of people and the majority of young children scavenging themselves away, looking like something out of a Mad Max movie, living in covered in cardboard boxes, scavenging for anything, hypodermic needles, bottles to which they can sell. And it was, and this is, I looked at and I dragged the mayor of Managua to this site. He'd never been there and he was the mayor. And I said, this isn't how it has to be. We too often settled for this pernicious lie of the powerful, that there is no alternative, that economic globalization as it stands, with all its exploitation, its environmental degradation and injustice, it's the only way. I do not believe that for a second. I'm a believer, and maybe it's my pathological Italian optimism. I say because I eat a lot of tomatoes. But it's about this absolute reverence that I have for small-scale economic initiatives. Now, the cynics who often pass on their cynicism as insight will say, hey, get a life. You know, these grassroots initiatives are too modest. 10 women planting a tree, a dozen youths digging a well, an old man teaching neighborhood kids to read. But from a global perspective, their scale and impact is monumental. And we, when I was shepherding and thinking about the body shop in the early days, and I was making just thousands and hundreds of thousands of these bottles of skin and hair care, thinking, how do you bring values into something that isn't laden with values? I mean, everything you put on your skin, you could use from your kitchen cupboard because it's a first cousin of cooking. The only way I could bring values is to look for ingredients grown and processed by cooperatives in the majority world and bring those values into the company by protecting these small-scale initiatives. And so we have now, after years, 35 suppliers in 20 countries, informal groups, cooperatives, and fair trade associations. We worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of families, and this doesn't include the thousands of families who directly benefit, with it, whether it's HIV and AIDS, training, health clinics, and fresh water. By themselves, they will not transform the global economy, but they do transform my company's thinking on what is right. We're experienced everywhere I go, whenever I go, this notion that there's this huge, and this is so exciting, this global insurgence against much what we're taught in business as an unnecessary way of life. There are a number of expressions that you're starting to hear now, words like civil society, words like reclaiming our common space, and economics as if people matter, and reverential ecology. And then within these remarkable sentiments, there's a host of social experiments and inventions. You just have to pop over to Italy and Spain and experience the hundreds of towns and cities adopting the slow food movement. This glorious, glorious antidote to globalization. This movement was founded in the foothills of Piedmont in Italy when it chooses to stand against the big business by preserving and supporting the traditional ways of growing and cooking and preserving the Italian way of food. They've now built a university for the delight and pleasure of taste. Only in Italy would you get a university studying that. And what it was started, it was started by a wine journalist. He was so outraged that they built a McDonald's on the footsteps of the Rome's Spanish Steps. And what he said, we need an antidote. Where you can protect the pandas, I'm going to protect the Italian asparagus. And it's dubbed the eco-gastronomy, and it tends to extend to the kind of attention that environmentalism has given towards endangered species. And now when you go to places like Sardinia, they've adopted the slow city movement, where they have banned neon signs. They have banned billboard ads, where they've developed a place where you can perambulate in the towns, where everybody's supposed to have 2 hours at least for a siesta at lunchtime. And perhaps to this antidote, these creative antidotes to globalization, is this wonderful tactic that is driving the administration and the organizations mad. It is the irresistible appeal of carnival as a tactic of resistance and dissent. Spontaneity and pleasure are the order of the day. And if resistance and rebellion aren't fun, they do not reflect the world we wish to create. And we will have lost this joyous sense of abandonment and this lust for life. You just go to India, where a year or so ago, 50,000 farmers, impoverished farmers, gathered together from the state of Karnataka and spent an entire day laughing. 50,000 peasant farmers spent an entire day laughing outside the state government offices, and the state government collapsed within the following week. Or if you go to any of the GM meetings, or where you will get barbed wire just protecting these meetings, these ministerial meetings. And in Quebec, what did the citizens do? They catapulted hundreds of teddy bears over the barbed wire. Now, if you look at these antidotes, you have the bread and circuses in Oregon and the puppeteers. You've got this carnival against capital. When the FBI approached me on the streets of Seattle at that protest and wanted information on the carnival against capital, I said, get a life. There's no organization. If you have to infiltrate it, you've got to wear a tutu. It's a samba rhythm. It's a rock band. It's kids dressed up. It's men in tutus. And if you look at this ragtag line encircling the globe of millions of grassroots initiatives, holding communities together, educating the kids, protecting the soil, and making their voices heard. At my most optimistic, I interpret this as the most creative explosion of social initiatives and solidarity our history has ever seen, and made more powerful by the spirit of transformation, which is producing new forms of cooperation, economic cooperation, that will allow people to work outside their relationship of dependency. To me, this feels like a global revolution, and a revolution where ideas have wings. And I would rather be measured by how we treat the weaker and the frail than how we treat on how our share prices, which isn't bad at the moment, but it's still pretty pathetic. Let me tell you one of our trading initiatives. This is right in one of the poorest states in India called Tamil Nadu. And we had an Irish girl who used to work in our Oxford body shop. And she was like Italian. She had brio and she was wild. And we sent her down to work with this community. Within a year, she had organized the making of wooden footsie rollers. You go into the body shop and millions of footsie rollers are made by this Teddy Export, which he then set up. 500 people work there. These are people who are unskilled, agricultural laborers, and have no security. We have a Montessori school that we've built, 270 kids. We bring in the kids who are disabled. We bring the teachers or take the teachers from this school into the town of Tirumangalam, where we teach women out of the sex industry into another profession. 17,000 livestock were treated by the clinic. And we have the best HIV and AIDS awareness attached to local garages. Truck drivers in India pass on AIDS. And we have the best form of coitus interruptus known to man, because when the truck drivers stop, they pick up the girls, they jump over their hedge, and this is where our merry band of young medics come and tap them on the shoulder and give them a free condom. And it works. So whether it's any, and I think today when I'm looking, and I was preparing for this chat, and knowing that there were some 13,000 people here, I'm thinking the most radical act of individualism in which we can engage today is to come here together as Christians, as students, as academics, activists, grannies, mums, in order to uncover the biggest secret our media and politicians are keeping from us, that we are not alone. All over the world, people are asking questions, raising the concerns, and sharing the ambivalences that might illuminate a way to a wiser and more just society. Make no mistake about it, we are living in heady times. Wherever I travel, into the epicenters of resistance, in Ogoni land, in the Niger Delta, where billions of dollars of barrels of oil and profits for Shell, and you walk in the Ogoni villages and you see oil spills and oil flares, and you go into the schools where the kids have made their own desks and writing their letters on the wall. You go into the hospitals where women are still having cesareans without any anesthetics. And you see the human slavery of the free zones, making the cheap Gap clothes or the Nike clothes, everything we wear that is on the high street. And a woman saying to me, just tell them one thing. All we want to do is to move from slavery to poverty. Or fighting for the water rights in India, where, you know, Pepsi and where Coca-Cola is just taking all of the water owned by this country to make Coca-Cola, and the indigenous farmers are having to go and pay for the water themselves. Or where in Bolivia, where farmers were told when Thames Water came in and privatized the water, that any water that fell from the heavens onto the roofs, they stole if they didn't pay the water company. They stole water collected from the rooftops. People, I believe that there is a shared vision of a growing force of dissidents forced into this existence by capitalism that is the most powerful movement that we've ever seen. The people who know that freedom just isn't about the right to vote a dozen times during your life, it's the right to decide your economic as well as your political destiny. And this is precisely what economic globalization is stealing from the people all around the world. And I believe, especially when I go into Central and South America, this is postmodern revolution, where you see the liberation of Latin America, where you see the articulate and active farming communities in India, the burgeoning women's cooperatives in Africa. Everywhere, power is being devolved from the center down to the grassroots, into the community, taking back what is rightfully theirs. Globalization, I believe, economic globalization, does not need to fill the world with exhausted, impoverished faces of the victims of free trade model. It can be about fair trade, where the commitment to human rights puts a smile on many more faces. The Zapatistas, that extraordinary group in the Chiapas in Mexico, calls it the rebirth of democracy. In England, we call it reclaiming the local. Out in the real world, beyond the radar screens of the media and the political classes, something is truly, truly massing. Something bigger than anyone here, any one of us has yet realized. Something that is beginning to look like a genuine, authentic global revolution. It seems that the like of this is the new politics for this new century. And this is above all what makes me utterly, utterly optimistic. Thank you very much. I'm signing books, is that right?
I'm signing books.
Thank you very much.
Down at the good book.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anita Roddick. Anita is going to the good book to sign books. If anybody would like a copy of her book, she's now going to the good book to sign books.